Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
I'm Linda Palacio, host of A Taste of the Past. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 in the Good Beer Seal. Today is Tuesday, July 7th, 2015. We've got some special friends in the studio. Joe Carroll from Spite and Dival and Feta Sal is going to talk about his grilling book. Kelly Taylor, president of New York City Brewers Guild and Kelso Brewer, and our good buddy Ben Keen, our wingman tonight from Beer Advocate Magazine. And some other special guests are joining us tonight. We've got some listeners from Sweden who are going to be in the studio with us, too. Beer Sessions Radio is brought to you by Union Beer Distributors, suppliers of world-class ales and lagers. If you have any questions for today, you can tweet us at @beer_sessions. Maggie will be tweeting live in the studio. So here we go. Ben Keen, you're like my summer wingman. How are you?
I'm going to call myself summer sidekick, I think. It just rolls off the tongue a little bit better, but it's great to be back on the show.
It's great having you in town, man. So you're the Beer Advocate editor, and you've been living in Ithaca, and now you're here in Brooklyn for the summer?
I'm in Brooklyn for the summer drinking Brooklyn beers, which I'm glad to be speaking with Kelly. And then, you know, hopefully we can mix it up and be enlightened about Cornell chicken at the same time and really kind of bring it full circle.
I love that. So, Joe, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you for having me back, Jimmy.
You know, you've been on a lot, and you're always one of our favorite guests.
Thanks, man.
But one reason we invite you on is your book about grilling. Tell us about that. You know, you've been part of Feta Sal and
so a lot of things. I have a barbecue restaurant and I have a grilling restaurant, I guess is the best way to describe St. Anselm. And I started working on a book. A few people had approached me over the years about doing a book. And I really, honestly, my feeling was, who's really wants to read a book by me? Like, honestly, what do I have to say? They convinced me over, I don't know, a year maybe that I actually
beers,
had something to say
some
and
beers.
Some beers perhaps. Yeah. I had a book agent who convinced me to do this, and then I met Nick Fischold, who wrote the book with me, who, quite honestly, if I didn't have somebody like Nick to work on the book with me and kind of help me navigate the waters of doing a book for the first time, I don't know if I would have done it. it's an undertaking, man. It took like 4 years to do this book, but it was a lot of fun. And that, you know, at the end of the day, it really was. It was very cool to do. And the book is kind of loosely based on all three of my places, on the cured meats and beer from Spite and Dival, the smoked meats and whiskey from Feta Sal, and the grilled meats and wine from St. Anselm. But it's predominantly made up of recipes that come out of Feta Sal and St. Anselm as well. So there's stories and there's background and there's information about beer, wine, and spirit and all that, but the bulk of the book are recipes based out of barbecuing.
So Feeding the Fire by Joe Carroll and Nick Fischold. We're going to talk a little about grilling and beer pairings on the show. So Kelly Taylor, president of New York City Brewers Guild, but we know you as the great brewer from Kelso and Heartland and Greenpoint Beer Works. How are you, man?
I'm doing all right. Enjoying some lovely beers. It's a lovely beer kind of day. Happy Good Beer Month. Yes,
yeah, man.
That's your kind of.
So what's going on with you? You're opening
a
tap room.
Is there a bad beer month?
bad beer month? No.
Right.
No, wait. Exactly. Is it all the months with a vowel or a good beer months? What was your question? I'm sorry.
What's going on?
Hey, what's going on? Well, you know,
open a tap room.
Yeah, we got a tap room opening up at the brewery. There's questions. There's answers. We're actually, because the law changed this last fall, we're able to serve beer by the glass in the tap room as opposed to just doing tastes and selling beer out the door. So we're actually putting a little bar in. And,
so to celebrate July Good Beer Month, after the show, we're going over to your brewery.
Yeah, we're going to go over there
and have a pint.
Six different beers on tap, some specialty bottles. And we took a lot of the beers that were aging in oak barrels. We have 26 oak barrels, whether they're bourbon or some Cabernet or whatnot. And we've got beer aging in them, and we use those as kind of the walls around the framing and the space to keep it separate from the rest of the brewery. But otherwise, you're right in the middle of the brewery.
Nice. So, that's great. Looking forward to that.
Yeah, there's no air conditioning, so but we have a nice cold pilsner.
Cold beer.
Top, so, yeah, we're in good shape.
And do you have somewhere in the facility cots for us if we're going to drink our way through six beers?
No, this is Brooklyn. You're going to have to go.
It's not the hospitality kick you expect out from New Kelly.
It's called Uber.
Uber. We have Uber. They're cots. Uber. Kind of expensive cots.
But let's talk. It's July. Let's talk about grilling and beer. So, Kelly, did you make a beer for one of Joe's restaurants?
We made a beer for Joe a couple of times. We've done a few different beers for Joe over the years.
Kelly's done a few beers for Fête de Sau in particular, but this latest beer we did, we're doing it at Spuyten Fête and Anselm, and it's really for the book.
Yeah. Well, really, it's for Joe.
Well, really, it's, for me. It's my
Joe,
personal beer.
Joe, somebody asked me this recently. Where did you sell your first keg of beer? And I said, I think it went to the Spuyten Duyvel.
That's right.
And Joe's been very supportive of local beer and just interesting beer. It doesn't always have to be local, but he's always been very good at bringing in interesting stuff and having a really eclectic beer selection before that was the thing to have in the city. And so as a result, he capitalizes on the fact that he can call me and have me make pretty much anything that he wants.
That's nice.
So call, hey, I wanted this thing, and why don't you make it with – why don't you do – the one we did for Feta was a Pilsner Sauvignon Blanc hybrid beer.
Exactly.
Which is where I learned about the Nelson Sauvin hops, which have that gooseberry passion fruity thing, which we use as a core hop in our IPA. I learned about that hop from that project with Feta. And then this one, but it's fun because Joe comes up, he's like, use salt and do these things and make it something wacky. And he said, why don't you do, I think you got the, you were talking to Evil Twin at some point about the Second Runnings beer that he did. You get the idea of the table beer somewhere along the line.
Yeah, I mean, I just thought for, thinking of something interesting to do, something a little out of the ordinary and that, wasn't the beer of the year kind of thing.
Yeah, and Joe's really good at kind of rattling us out of complacency and just then throwing the book at it. And the nice thing is then we'll do it and we'll talk about it, and then he'll buy it and sell it. And everybody's going to like it. And so ultimately the consumer wins because you got people like Joe that are just turning the screws on people like us that sometimes just get comfortable making Pilsner, So and the aforementioned barrel-aged stuff, which you'll see later. You can sleep on that, by the way. I was thinking about the cots.
There
you could
go.
Probably lay some malt bags on top of the barrels. And I'm trying to hook you up. Don't worry about it. We'll get there.
Do you make a lot of custom beers, Kelly, for other restaurants and bars?
We do make some custom beers for beer places, bars and restaurants. I don't make a lot. I mean, I get probably a phone call a day from somebody that wants to do a special beer. But, sometimes we've had a lot of successes with that in the past, and sometimes not so much, where people think that they want to have a special beer, and then we make it, and then they just don't sell it, or they're not really into beer that much to begin with.
It's a hard thing. An entire batch of beer on your own with one outlet. So that's why, having three outlets for us to move this beer makes it move a lot faster. I mean, we can move a lot of beer at Fête de Sau, granted, but still, it's hard. It's, it's quite a bit of beer, and it's not that you won't go through that beer in a year. Of course you will, but ideally you want to go through that beer in 2 months.
Yeah, that's the other thing is, our half batch is 28 kegs of beer. That's the minimum amount I can really brew. So that kind of whittles down a lot of places that want to have their own beer. Jimmy's 43, for example, is not going to go through 28 kegs of one type of beer anytime soon. It's more of an eclectic beer selection that you've got down there, right? So you're not going to have somebody do a special batch, even though you might want it. You would want to have a special keg.
A special homebrew batch.
Yeah, you could do a special keg, and there's plenty of small micros in the city, nanos, doing kind of homebrewy, nanos, homebrew, whatever. But so those are the things, but I can't do that, so I need to have some kind of volume because I don't want the beer, I want the beer to be great, and I don't want it to be, I'll go through it eventually.
Especially a 3 point whatever percent table beer.
Yeah, and then the table beer that we did for the book or for Joe was the second runnings of the industrial IPA. We did the first runnings, which is basically run that mash out and ferment that, put some quite a copious amount, really a ridiculous amount of hops in it, and then ferment that out. And then we take the second runnings and put that into a fermenter. And we did a saison with a little bit of Belgian yeast with a little bit of salt, and just made it really, it was about 3.9%, really, really light and delicate. We have another one in tank right now that is single hop with Nelson Sauvin's and a Kolsch yeast. Same thing, just
the
second
what,
running.
What's the tie-in with the book?
Well, the book is called Feeding the Fire, and the beer is called Feeding the Fire. And the beer really is, as a table beer, meant to be consumed with barbecue and grilled meats and, warm weather drinking and eating. It's quenching. It's low alcohol. You could drink. It's good for daytime drinking, which is kind of my favorite drinking.
Yeah, and the low alcohol thing is important. The citrus component, floral, fruity, citrus, a little bit of salt. You know, that all ties right into the grilling. You know, and then ideally it puts out the fire.
Ben, how do you go about pairing beer and food? I know you're doing some articles in Beer Advocate.
Yeah, we Beer Advocate introduced a new column called Table Mates, where we take a single dish and ask a restaurateur or a chef or a cicerone to match up three different beers with it and then talk about what those three beers bring out, you know, if they are complementary or if they contrast, that sort of thing. And I think it's really fun to play around with for people, to the idea that there isn't necessarily one perfect food to go with one beer and a one-to-one kind of thing, and to sort of get more used to the idea that, you know, a beer that has a lot of different things going on can play with all the different ingredients in a particular dish in a fun way, too. So that's what we are going for with that. And I think just looking for sort of surprising or unexpected experiences when we're commissioning those articles or thinking ahead about what haven't we done. I think that's fun. What were some that you've done so far?
Give us an example.
So far we've done, recently we did a Table Mates column featuring a dish from Jimmy's Number 43, which were wings in a Filipino sauce, I guess you'd say. Adobo wings, and those are a little salty. They're not really spicy wings, but they have a savory quality to them and a little bit of sweetness and tanginess. And we paired them with two different sour beers. And the third beer was an IPA from Other Half, as I recall. And so each of those beers kind of accented something different in that recipe. So I think that's what's fun and neat to try. I don't know, Joe, when you're thinking about ordering the beers that you're going to carry at Feta Sao, for instance, I presume that you are, part of it is driven by what you know the consumers are going to be interested in and is going to move. But as far as thinking about how things will work with your menu, what's your thought process there?
You know, it's fairly simple, really. First of all, I feel like beer is easily paired with most food, and most food is easily paired with beer. Beer and food go together extremely well, and it almost doesn't matter the food or the beer. They do really go together well. You almost never find yourself in a situation with beer and food that you can with wine, where there's a clash. There's flavors that are kind of fighting each other. That doesn't really seem to happen with beer much. So it's a lot easier in my mind to pair beer and food. But, you know, at Feta, because it's barbecue solely, there is a little bit to consider as far as that goes. So we really want low alcohol beers. We want really kind of crisp, quenching beers, a little bit of bitterness, a little bit of, you know, hoppy bite, or at least a really dry kind of astringency that's going to not only pair well with the barbecue, but really be kind of quenching and wash the food down and really be satisfying. I find beers that are a little too rich in flavor or too high in alcohol do get in the way. They do start, you know, fighting for your attention against the barbecue, because the barbecue is pretty intense between the seasoning and the smoke and the richness of the food and all that, of the meat and the fat and all that. It can create a little bit of a fight as far as your attention goes, you know, if you go with a really richly flavored beer or a higher alcohol beer. So that much is considered. And I think generally speaking, that's true with food. I'd stay away from the really high gravity stuff. I'd stay away from sweetness, obviously. So a lot of Belgian styles and imperial stouts and stuff would be out, you know, for most savories.
It's an interesting discussion, because one of the beer dinner concepts that we like to promote, you know, the standard beer dinner is five courses or four courses, and each course paired with a different beer. And I've talked to places, it's like, if I'm going to come to and walk people through a beer dinner, we can actually take it a different direction and just do one beer. and just do the nut brown lager and put it in different
five different ways
and put it in different glasses and talk about how the glass actually changes how the beer comes out, and then really let the chef go kind of nuts with maybe using the beer in cooking and just in sauces and as a complement, as a contrast, and let them build the food entrees around that. So,
or put it in an opaque glass and don't tell anybody that it's all nut brown.
Oh, yeah. There you go. Yeah.
And then really have fun.
Yeah. Well, that's not a bad idea. Yeah. I like deceiving the customer first and foremost. That's a good concept. But it's been fairly well received because, you know, I'm sitting there walking people through it. So it's not like they, you know, they're like, oh, I'm getting stiffed. I just have this one beer.
Yeah.
You know, and it's good for the restaurant, too, because then they don't have to try to curate, you know, four or five different beers from me. And so
that's cool.
But it's kind of the same lines because it does come off differently with different foods. You got some blue cheeses in there. It's going to come off completely different if you've got a nice red sauce and a little bit of garlic, you know, but it's delicious with both.
And that really is the type of beer that can pretty much go with anything.
Yeah. I mean, well, that's why we made it.
It's got the bitterness, it's got the malt, it's got, you know.
It's a nice clean, it's a lager finish, nice and clean. But yeah, but it's right kind of along the lines that you're talking about.
Right.
It's very, very simple.
Can we get this beer or was it a one-off?
That's the Kelso Nut Brown Lager. It's our flagship.
Oh, that one.
Yeah.
What about
to try it sometime.
The table beer you made for Joe.
Oh, that one? I think that's gone. You guys drank that.
I think we just went through our last
you drank that.
So when you make a special,
ridiculously fast.
Kelly, when you make a special beer, why don't you keep making it? Like that table beer
not
sounds
special anymore.
Right.
Well, why? There's so many. Isn't there a shirt? So many beers, so little time. You know, it goes for the brewer, too.
I know. I love that. And what's this? This is what? Your Pilsner?
No, I still want to do the Feta Salve again. I want to bring that one back. That was,
hey, man.
That was a fun one.
I'm always game.
Yeah, passion fruit juice. Chardonnay and Pilsner, Sauvignon Blanc yeast.
We did another one called Chard, too, with Chardonnay.
Oh, yeah, the Chardonnay.
That was the first one we did.
Has Guy Fieri called you for his special beer yet?
As Guy Fieri called me.
Well, yes, it's made with peanut butter, bacon, marshmallows, and hamburgers.
And special super melty cheese.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know? Don't tell me you're going to heat the beer and melt the cheese on top of it.
I'm not going to do that.
No. 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 Well, one thing I want to say, Joe, that, you know, I always respect you because you keep coming on, man. I mean, you know, I remember your space next to Spite and Dival. You took it over, you expanded your beer garden, and then you eventually put in the St. Anselm's, which blew people away with the grill menu.
Thank you.
You know, tell us how you started that place in terms of the food identity.
Well,
that was a pretty cool place.
If you remember, St. Anselm was a failed place first.
It was like a hot dog joint or something. Which I was excited about.
I want to redo that. Like, I want to do that place again. It was just, we did this like hamburger and hot dog thing, which I loved, and I thought it was great, and we did, like, we were executing everything great. It was just so lunch driven, and
plus you didn't have a liquor license there.
Well, we didn't initially. at the time, and I think it's still even true to this day, there's not a huge lunch business in Williamsburg. Most people are either sleeping past lunch or they work in Manhattan. So there's, I mean, especially 6-7 years ago, there wasn't much of a lunch business, but even today there's not. So it didn't really work out, unfortunately, but it gave me the opportunity to stop and rethink what I want to do there, come up with a different concept, and that was St. Anselm 2.0, which has done very well. And really, that, you know, the idea for that place came out of me grilling for family and friends in the summertime and just loving, like, getting amazing meats and sometimes very simple, inexpensive cuts, sometimes really extravagant cuts, and just doing nothing but putting salt and pepper on them and putting a nice char on them and really enjoying that. And also from my years of grilling all sorts of oddball things, like making grilled BLT sandwiches and things like that. And it was a matter of just like, all right, let's do a restaurant where 90-something% of the menu is all on the grill, all hits the grill at some point.
And you also had things like grilled sardines.
Right. Yeah. And like our string beans are grilled and our cauliflower is grilled and, you know, things like that. So really pretty much everything except our mashed potatoes and one or two other things.
I'll tell you, it's one of my favorite places. I love Spite and Dial for beer, and I love St. Anselm's for food. So,
thank you.
Hey, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
This one's called Cool Boy by Sleepies. Be right back. In 1996, L. Knife & Son acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn, but has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Union Beer has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Kings County, Brooklyn, through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education on all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the 14 counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're celebrating. Everybody's back in tonight. Justin Kennedy's back. Maggie Seiden's back. Jack Inslee's back. And then we've got our special summer guests, Ben Keen, Kelly Taylor, and Joe Carroll. This is a cool show. We've got two guys here from Sweden. I think Sweden's one of the top export markets for craft beer from America. Chris and Robert, great guys. They've emailed me. They came by Jimmy's number 43 last night, so they're sitting in on the show. How are you guys? Hey, Chris, Robert.
Hey, I'm doing really good.
Yeah, man.
It's awesome to be here. Meet you guys.
It's nice having you guys
tonight.
Yeah, it's really awesome to be here.
So where do you guys live in Sweden?
Basically 1 hour north of Stockholm.
Stockholm.
Yeah.
And so you say you get a lot of American craft beers in Sweden?
Yeah, we have hundreds more or less at the time being.
That's great, man.
Since we are second in the world.
Well, thanks for coming on. You guys hang out with us. We're going to keep tasting beers, and we're going to talk to you guys more. So thanks for coming on the show.
Sounds good.
So, Ben, you brought a beer for us. Ben Keen, what are we drinking, bro?
Yeah, so I have been traveling down south a lot this year and checking out the beer scenes in all those states, I guess 10 of them. And so one of the places I went was Tennessee. And in Memphis, there's a great brewery there called Wiseacre. It's a super cool, speaking of tap rooms, it's a super cool kind of psychedelic looking space. They've got this great outdoor patio. It's in kind of a gritty part of town.
The kind of brewery where they have like a donkey's ass on the label or something?
No, Wiseacre. No donkey's ass on the label, but they do have a label with a unicorn on it. So, you know, kind of close. But this is called, sort of a Belgian-style Trappel. So it's, you know, it's got a decent body on it. It's sort of a deep gold. It's a little bit on the sweeter end of things, but it kind of has a nice, drier Belgian finish.
Did you say Trappel?
I did.
Okay.
I like that. Wiseacre Trappel. But you know, since we have Joe Carroll in the room, you know.
But I love being corrected.
But listen to me.
No, I'm not correcting you. I just never. Usually people say triple, right?
Yeah.
I've heard Trappel.
Trappel.
I haven't heard Trappel in a long time.
Well, let's ask Joe Carroll because my next segue is despite his grilling and restaurants and all that stuff. I still love him as the guy who owns my favorite beer bar in New York, Spite and Dival,
nice.
Which you know,
which nobody can pronounce.
Yes,
right.
How do you just pronounce that?
It's Spite and Dival.
But Kelly, you said it differently earlier.
Yeah, I don't know how to pronounce anything. That's why I have Sonia.
Resist the UI. The UI really messes with people.
Spite and Dival. So, what do you think of this beer, Joe? Because you know I know you taste a lot of Belgian
beers.
This
is not
in your time.
Typically. I mean, this is obviously an American version of this style. Not typically my favorite style of beer. I always get a little DMS in the style, a little of that canned corn kind of thing, always in triples and Belgian golden ales, which is not my favorite thing. So it's generally not my style of beer that I would go for most times. There was a time when I really did like this a lot, back in probably the mid 90s or something. You know, it's like anything else, you know, music or whatever it might be. You go through waves of loving something and then not necessarily loving it as much, or, you know, finding something different and moving on and, you know, searching new ground for something different. So at the moment I'm all about drinking low gravity beers and have been for a while.
In fact, he commissions them.
Right.
Carell's Trappel.
I haven't been into drinking high gravity beer since probably the early 2000s. And just after a while, you know, like anything else, I think most people, and I think it happens in the wine world as well, if you grow up drinking as, you know, we did in our generation, drinking just commercial American lager or crap wine, then I think you're immediately drawn towards the really intense, high gravity, you know, over the top stuff right away, because you're looking for something so radically different to the like really lame, insipid stuff that you grew up drinking. But over time, that fades, and then you start appreciating those lighter bodied beers again and those lower gravity beers again.
You know, this is a really interesting. I mean, I'm right there with you. I'm you know, most of the Kelso stuff we try to make it more sessionable, and you know, 5.5% or somewhere around there. But this is a really interesting. It's very perfumey and bright and floral, and I wouldn't have guessed it's about 10%. You know, by tasting it tastes maybe 7 or 8, right, maybe, yeah. You know, so it's fairly smooth and it's effervescent. And I like that. There's some depth to this, and I always like a beer that's got a little bit more depth than a little.
It's
bit more
obviously
character.
Well made, and it's got a nice balance of bitterness to counteract some of that sweetness. So there's no question it's really well made. It's just stylistically not my favorite type of thing, but you could tell it's a really well made beer.
Yeah, and just very,
somebody knew what they were doing.
Yeah. The brewer went to Deumann's in Germany. If I'm pronouncing that right, I don't know, Kelly.
I don't know.
I'm not German. My wife is.
Well, now, since we're doing the high gravity, so Chris and Robert from Sweden, you brought us, what, some Swedish, it's a double IPA. Tell us the name of the brewery, Chris.
Yeah, the name of the brewery is Brewski from southern Sweden. And this is their double IPA infused with mangoes. Really, really lovely, nice American style IPA. And I hope it holds up, so you guys do get to get.
You brought
some.
This on the plane with you?
Yeah.
Yeah. So when you come to America, what are you looking for? Now, you've been to what? Maine?
We went to Maine Beer Company, Hill & Farmstead, New England Beer Company, and Trillium up in Boston. And basically just been looking for great craft beer. No special style for that sake. I mean, I prefer everything. If it's good beer, it's good beer.
Are there any breweries you're looking for in particular?
Actually, no. We've been on the East Coast, on the Northeast Coast. So
nothing that you know you've heard of in Sweden that you can't get there, that you came here and you were like, yeah, we got to hunt that down and try it.
Trillium was one. Night Shift was one.
Really, you heard of both of those places in Sweden?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
It's a global market.
They're little breweries.
Very, very small.
Yeah.
Maine as well.
And who impressed you the most so far of the places you visited?
For me, I'd say Trillium.
Okay.
Their hoppy beer has been amazing. They really know their hops. Not very, very good balance.
And what places are you visiting in New York City?
Actually, here's been mostly just bars. I mean, we went to your place, James number 43, yesterday, and we went to the Pony Bar. We went to Draft 55, looking to go to... I hope to go to Spite and Dival as well. Of course, since I heard from it. And Barcade, we're going to Luxus, to Thirst. Just trying great beers all around.
Well, thanks for coming. I like this beer. It's pretty fresh, the Mango Double IPA. Kelly, what do you think of it?
It's very refreshing. It's always tricky using fruit like that and having it come off, not cloying, not too sweet, not taste extract-y, and it just... First thing I tasted was like, oh, mangoes.
it's nice.
It's fruity. You know, I'm not a big, you know, kind of echoing what Joe was saying earlier, not my style. I'm not really a big fruit beer person. I don't really go for that kind of thing. But it's nice. It's, you know, I can have a small glass of that.
When Joe was joking earlier about making a peanut butter beer. Could you make a peanut butter beer?
It's been done.
Yeah, we made a peanut porter a number of years ago. We called it the Dunkel Nutter. And it was basically a brown porter with defatted peanut flour. You can get it from bakery stores. So the fat messes up the head retention and the texture of the beer. So you can get defatted. It also messes up baking. So you need, if you want to use peanuts but not have the fat, you can get this defatted flour. So we use that. But evidently then your whole brewery is an allergen center and you have to put the labels on everything and made in process. You could kill somebody if they're not paying attention. But it was really nice. It was definitely a one pint kind of thing. It was kind of a chocolate peanut kind of combination. But a lot of bartenders around town started putting hits of Chambord in it and calling it PB&Js.
Somebody in Boston did years ago, a decade or more ago. I had a peanut butter and jelly beer. Somebody from I forget what brewery in Boston did up at Extreme Beer about a decade ago.
Yeah.
So yeah, people
was it Funky
that.
Buddha?
I don't think so. It was.
No.
It's a brewery. I'm they have forgetting
one.
The name, but I
no
think
no crusts. They call theirs.
No crust.
Yeah.
And are they in Boston?
No, but they come to our Extreme Beer Fest every year. So yeah. I'm just guessing. I don't know.
Yeah, these guys were definitely in Boston. I want to say they were near Fenway, but I can't remember the name of the brewery for some reason.
Was it a Boston Beer Works?
It might have been. Yeah, it might have been Boston Beer Works.
That's the only brewery near Fenway.
Yeah, I think that is it.
Yeah. Yeah. There we go. Mystery solved.
Yeah, absolutely.
Switch up the mics, boys. Bring them back.
where?
We got a lot of people in this room tonight. So peanut butter, beer, and you must experience a lot of stuff. I mean, as a beer advocate editor. First, I know you a long time, so we're buddies, and you know, but it seems that you must be. How many bottles of beer do you have in your apartment?
I mean, well, at the moment, not that many because I'm subletting in Brooklyn. So everything's a little smaller in Brooklyn. I
except for the beers.
Except for the beers. I travel a lot and I try to pick up beers from all over the country that I don't have access to back in New York. I get samples every once in a while and I love trying new things. So, you know, I've never had Mango Fieber double IPA or Feber, I don't know.
Fieber.
Which is
either
nice.
One is fine.
That's fun. So I'm always looking for, you know, every time I go to Jimmy's, I'm going to order the thing on tap that I haven't had before. And that just kind of helps me keep some sort of sense of what's going on in beer because it's
I'm going to do a plug here.
Changing.
Since on Nico Cremitas, he's a beer writer in New York, writes for different edible magazines and Brooklyn Magazine. He's also the guy part of this Craft Beer New York app, and they came out with a map, the Craft Beer New York map, and we had a little party last Thursday to launch July Good Beer Month. And what's great about Nico is that Nico is like, when he does something, he wants a specific beer. So the beers he brought in were beers that I never would have had. So he brought in Threes, which is a great new brewery in Gowanus, Brooklyn. Jeff O'Neill, who was formerly at Peekskill, made a beer called Just Add Water, which is it's a nice, to me it's like a fresh hop ale, but he calls it an IPA. His friends out in Farmingdale, Long Island at Barrage, it was the first time they had a keg in Manhattan, and they have the thing called Yada Yada Yada, which is actually a peanut butter brownie.
Oh, wow, there
which
we go.
Is, and the third one was he got a sour beer from Finback that I hadn't tried either. So it's just a shout out. But for July Goober Month, some cool things are happening, and I think Nico Cremitas is a great guy. But check this out, the craft beer map. In the craft beer app, so I don't know. But that's it. We'll take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Well, 30,000 feet, sure a long way down to fall. You can bet on my way down, I was sure to count them all. Now and then I sort of did regret my choice to fly. Ryan lost my luggage, and I was gonna die. It happened to me.
This one's called Banjo Pickin' Man by the Sparrows. Be right back.
Or take the train and remember the day when I fell through the hole in the floor of the plane. As I looked up, I saw a few more poor unfortunate souls who had no water conscious thought.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We got some awesome things going on today. We got some Swedish beer in the house, man. Skål. Our boys Chris and Robert, great listeners from Sweden. They're in New York. They were doing the East Coast tour, right? You guys went to Maine, Vermont. Now you're in New York City. Thanks for coming on the show. And Kelly, we got one more beer from you, man. So is it true that these guys brought your Kelso Flemish?
No.
From Sweden?
No.
It's no?
Not true.
I have no idea what you're talking about. I brought this. It was like,
these guys, I think
took
in
this
Sweden,
like 2 miles from
Chris
here.
Chris and Robert know more about American beer than I do. Maybe not as much as Ben Keen, but...
Yeah, sure, they brought it.
They brought all their beers from Sweden.
See that?
See?
No, no, but this was here. This came from my cellar. This is good. This is our Flemish Red. We've got a new one coming up this fall. Ooh. This one's been aged for 2 years, and we have another one coming out.
This is like your last bottle?
Second to last. So there's one more at the brewery for those of you that come over later and try out our new
I think
taste.
I got about six bottles in the cellar stashed away.
So, Joe, where do you sell? Do you sell at Spite and Dival or you know?
Yeah, at Spite. I mean, I have some of my own stuff, but...
You want one?
Yeah, please. But I... yeah, most of the stuff I keep at Spite and absolutely. Yeah.
To you, is Spite and Dival still your kind of your beer temple?
It's funny. It's the place that I still pay the most attention to. It's the place that I still put the most work into. Because it so much of it is based on what I want in there. So I really have to manage the list on a weekly basis. And there's always specialty stuff that I'm, you know, dealing with and buying months out before it even gets here. And, you know, I'm the one bringing stuff up from the cellar little by little, you know, the specialty stuff. So I'm still involved with Spite more than I am on a daily or weekly basis than any of my other places. It's really, that said too, it's also the thing I know the most about. I'm not a restaurant guy. I'm not a front of the house guy. I'm not a chef. I'm not any of those things. I mean, I've done it all and I can.
Except
some
that
of
you are though.
You kind of are a restaurant.
No, I hate to tell you this, but you kind of really. Are a restaurant guy now.
But I mean, I'm not. I didn't grow up working in restaurants. I didn't get into restaurants until I opened Fête de Sal. Really, I mean, even Spite and Dival is not a restaurant. So, a lot of that stuff I'm still learning, and I'm still fairly green at actually the front of the house. If I was the guy on the floor running the restaurant, it's not going to do as well as other people who really know what they're doing. But I do know beer and I do know wine and I do know food and I know that stuff. And I know what it is I'm trying to achieve at these places. So that's the type of thing I'm still really involved with. And so that's why on a weekly basis, the beer list at Spite and Dival, the wine list at St. Anselm is still my fingerprint.
Joe, I have a question. Speaking of beer and food, I believe I have not seen your book in physical form, but I was reading about it, and I believe there's a recipe in there for steaks that have been brined in a stout.
Right.
So I'm curious when you decided to put that in there, and as people are starting to use the book that's been out for a month or so now, what sort of stout... So, would you recommend? What would be great with that recipe?
This recipe is based on a very old recipe that Frank Carlo, I believe his name is, from Hearth Restaurant, kind of rediscovered and started doing. And that is a really old Roman steak recipe that gets aged in wine and a lot of old kind of medieval spices and so forth.
Yeah, and yours has cinnamon and nutmeg.
Right. So,
in it, right?
So our version is the version that we do in the book is kind of an English riff on that. So instead of using wine, we're using imperial stout and and again a lot of the same kind of medieval spicing. The cut of steak we use as well is very English in that it's rump steak, which is something they eat a lot of in the UK. We don't really eat much of here. And I like using imperial stout because of the higher alcohol and the intensity of flavor and so forth. I think it comes through much, much better than a traditional English stout ever would, which is only about 5% in alcohol. So it needs the higher alcohol of the imperial stout. It needs the concentration of the imperial stout to really, you know, work its
magic.
So
you're like basically cook with high alcohol beers and drink the low alcohol beers.
Right, right. Sure. Yeah.
It's the takeaway.
I mean, I love imperial stouts. I do actually, but you know, I'm not going to drink much of it. I'm going to have a glass, you know.
Joe, do you ever do beer dinners? I mean,
we don't. You know, at Spuyten, there's really no type of dinner food. At Anselm, it's so wine driven. We've done one wine dinner ever there with Sean Thackeray, and quite frankly, I would never have done it if it wasn't Sean, who hadn't been in New York City in a decade and chose our place to come to and do this dinner. You know, mostly because our places aren't physically set up to do so in a really good and logical way. So it becomes a little weird and a little awkward to do them there. I think if the physical layout of St. Anselm, let's say, was a bit better, we could do more of these dinners. We're also kind of slammed every night. So it's always weird for me to, you know, hold up normal service to do a specialty service and that kind of stuff. So I just kind of let it roll.
It's kind of like if you're, sure running a restaurant, you got to run your restaurant.
Exactly. Yeah. At Samia, a newer place that we opened back in October, that's only 18 seats. We're just now starting to do some, you know, plan some beer and wine dinners.
You know, one thing that is interesting, I don't know if you thought about it, but something that some other restaurant groups in the city have done is had for the beer dinner, have just do a prefix. Mm-hmm. You've got to lay out a prefix, and you say, oh, here's a prefix menu.
Right. And that's what we did for this wine dinner.
Yeah, well. Yeah. I mean, and I've done those, and it makes a lot more work for me.
Right.
You know, because then, you know, because not everybody's sitting down and having the same thing at the same time. By the time, you know, 9 o'clock rolls around, I've got these guys having starters and these guys having dessert and everything in the middle. So I'm running around kind of.
Oh, because it's come as you are. But
come as you are.
Deal.
Here's the menu.
Yeah, that's tough, though.
Yeah,
right,
so you do some reservations on it for the prefix, so you know you have like 5 tables to start, but then over the course of the night, you wind up having 40 covers on the thing, which is brutal on me, but it's an interesting kind of extra thing that the places that have similar setups where they can't really do the full sit-down thing, or they don't want to do the full sit-down thing, but they want to do the dinner. You know, it's an interesting thing, and I have fun at it, but at the end of the night, I'm beat.
We've been very lucky at St. Anselm in that we only have 47 seats there, and we are booked, like, packed every night.
Right.
So if that wasn't the case, then I'd be much more inclined to, hey, let's do something interesting here. Let's, you know, try to bring people in on a Monday night kind of thing. But because it's so busy every night, I almost feel like I'm hurting myself by doing
stuff
like
that. There's no real compelling reason to do it. I mean, because you have a great beer selection. Anyway, you said you're a wine place, but you go in there and there's beers that I've never seen before.
Yeah, we try to, I mean, obviously we try to have great beer.
Unless I made them.
It's just less of the focus.
Even then it's hard to find.
You know? So we could just, if I was coming from Sweden, I could just come to New York and do a Joe Carroll tour. So I'd get beers at Spite and Dive.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Maybe barbecue at Fetisa.
I got 5 places. Well,
within 50
then
yards
St.
of each
Andrews
other.
Then St. Andrews for dinner. Right. Samia on the next night because I just want vegetable driven.
Yeah,
that's actually the place I want to go is Samia. I haven't been there yet.
Come, please. Yeah.
Vegetable driven menu, but there's still meat.
Yeah, it's not vegetarian. The chefs, my partners there, use protein for stocks and reductions and all sorts of different things. And sometimes actually on the menu, too. Sometimes as a small little piece of a dish, sometimes as the main focus of the dish, but it's really a restaurant that's driven by vegetables, though it's not vegetarian.
If Ben was going to come and do a Beer Advocate focus piece on one dish from any of your restaurants.
Good question.
And then pair it with different beers. What dish would you say, tonight, Ben, I want you to try this dish. And then we'll pair it with like 20 beers. Because that's what he really does. He'll sit down and taste 20 beers.
No, I think like maybe the ribeye at St. Anselm because it's such a distinct flavor and something also a flavor that most people get too, like, you know, salt, pepper, and beef. It's really that simple, so it's very focused flavor. But that said, you can go in so many different directions with it. You can go from a sour beer to a pilsner to a stout. And all will work well with it.
Mm-hmm. Is that that's not the axe handle?
Yeah, the axe handle.
That's the axe handle.
Bone
in ribeye. When I go there, I'm going to have the axe handle and the cream spinach.
Nice.
And that's
what's beer.
Everything. What's that?
What's the beer?
I don't know. I have no idea what he's going to have on tap. So you know, I'm going to go through it. I'm probably going to have 3 beers.
Sure.
One of the few taps that we've had on consistently since we've opened is Monkshoff Schwartz beer, and I think that's right, like perfectly in the middle, and very similar to what you said about your nut brown ale, and that. Kind of hits all
lager.
Nut brown lager.
Correct.
Yes. Very, very correct. Right. In that it hits all those points. It's light and easy drinking and crisp, but it's also got this malty structure to it that kind of gives it a little backbone.
Yeah. I think actually a lot of times when I go there, I wind up drinking wine.
Right.
I mean, because it's a tremendous wine selection as well. And, you know, I'll have a beer to start and then move on to wine, then go back to beer and then move on to wine.
And Kyle, let's jump back to you. So you're from Pacific.
Uber, once again.
Pacific Northwest. Pacific Northwest.
Yeah.
Can you show us a photo tonight of what your dad just caught, some Dungeness crabs?
Yeah, I'll see if I can look that up. There.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Dungeness crabs, let's do the same thing. So Dungeness crabs, first of all, how would you cook them?
Well, Dungeness crab, you know, it's the West Coast crab, and it's got a lot of meat in the legs, a lot of meat in the body, and if you get those suckers fresh, they all you need to do is boil it. You just boil them for 10 minutes, pull them out, and shuck them, and they taste like butter. already. You don't have to. Don't put any lemon on them. Don't dip them in butter. You're just going to ruin the dang thing.
Nothing.
Nothing. Just pull them out and just eat them. And then if you get them a day old, you know, from the grocery store, or you can't eat all these dang crab because they're just going nuts, then you can hit them with a little bit of butter, or you shuck them all out, roll them in breadcrumbs and parsley and some salt and pepper and stuff, and make crab cakes out of them. Then you patty them up and then fry them and
West Coast style.
Yeah. Oh,
West Coast delightful. Crab cakes? I don't know. I'm from Maryland, so.
Yeah, but we don't
use have it. To talk about this later.
Yeah, well, we don't use any of those spices that you need to use to disguise your crab in Maryland.
Nice.
Ours is all, you know, pure in it, purity.
So what beers would you pair with a Dungeness crab?
I
know Joe has a suggestion.
Yeah, you know,
he's smiling here.
Yeah. I mean, I would do a nice crisp Pilsner to start off with, or IPA, just nice, a nice West Coast IPA, big, bold, citrusy, not the really bitter hop bombs, but the back note, all the hops and the whirlpool and the dry hopping, where you get all that rich hoppy texture to it, because it's just a nice
the bright, orange and grapefruit.
Oh yeah, nice big. So you want that citrusy component to it, because it really, you know, the crab really have that flavor to them to begin with.
Yeah, I'm getting really hungry. And luckily we're at Roberta's in Bushwick, and I know there's something. There's probably a good steak waiting for me out there and a pork chop. And last notes, Chris and Robert from Sweden. So you guys, a typical Swedish dish, let's say we're going to drink a good beer. What's a typical Swedish dish and a Swedish beer you'd pair with it? Or an American beer?
Typical Swedish dish, obviously. We're famous for the IKEA Swedish meatballs.
And
What beer would you drink with it?
What do real Swedish people eat, though?
Actually,
herring?
Most really, yeah, herring.
Yeah. Herring, yeah.
Pickled herring.
Yeah, there's a festival, isn't there?
Yeah.
I love your cloudberries.
Oh, they're awesome.
These are delicious. Yeah.
Wait, Chris, so IKEA meatballs.
And the Swedish meatballs, I'd go with a brown ale.
And good, then give me a Swedish brown ale and an American brown ale.
First thing I think about in Sweden is the Popple's Brown Ale from Gothenburg, actually.
And what about you, Robert? You got one in mind?
I think they're Popple's.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And then what about an American beer that you like? Because we're almost out of time.
We have to go with Kelso Nut Brown Lager.
Nice one! that's how you make friends. And I will say this. We love that we have...
You could come to the brewery later.
Listeners. I guess we have listeners in Sweden now, too. We know we've had listeners in Germany and England and around America. So, Chris and Robert, thanks so much for coming on. And Bennett, anything else you want to say? You're here for the summer in Brooklyn?
I'm here for the summer. I'm just like Jimmy's little intern, following him around. If he needs a cup of coffee... You know, that ribeye, I'm going to go get it for him.
That's what I want. All right. And Kelly, what are we doing after the show tonight?
Well, we're going to go over to the brewery and check out the new tap room.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
And Joe, I know you're very busy. Where are you going after the show? And you can tell us the truth.
I'm going to the McCarran Hotel and Pool, where I just opened a new restaurant called Oleander's. And we're now in the middle of turning over the rooftop lounge into our own space as well, called Xanadu.
is that why so you're wearing the Cheech and Chong shirt?
No, not exactly, but I guess it does help. So I'm going over there to check in and check out some stuff.
All right. And our plug, it's a 7th annual July Good Beer Month, and everyone in the room has been part of it at some point over the years, and it's still going strong. Some special things, there's still the WNYC, the Craft Beer Jam at the Green Space coming up. But in particular, this weekend, our good friends Jessica and Johnny, Beer and Beer United, the last few years they've been representing different Spanish craft beers. And it's a very low-key promotion this week from July 7th to 14th. It's tied in with the Pamplona running of the Bulls. They've got some Spanish craft beers in different New York City pubs like Jimmy's Number 43, Proletariat, St. Cambrinus, Blind Tiger. We're going to be featuring some Spanish beers. And this Saturday I put together an event called Running with the Beef. Cookout NYC. It's cookoutnyc.com. It's at the it's in Manhattan. It's the same place that Zum Schneider does their World Cup and some other things. But check it out, cookoutnyc.com. We still get tickets. It's this Saturday. It's an awesome outdoor beef grilling event with Spanish craft beers and some 6.2. So you can check out more at goodbeersteel.com. It's July Good Beer Month. We'll be doing things all month. I'd like to thank our sponsors at Union Beer Distributors who have helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Thanks to Joe, Kelly, and Ben, and Chris and Robert from Sweden for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network.
Thank you, Jimmy.
I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Maggie Seiden and Justin Kennedy, and our engineer extraordinaire, Jack Inslee. Thanks for listening. We'll see Woo-hoo. You next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Yeah, baby. Woo. Right back.
Listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.